From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 18th day of September 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and Daryl Good's thoughts on the soybean crop. Meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and in the second half of this Harvest Hour edition of the program, we'll take your calls for Scott Irwin. He's an ag economist here on campus. Scott penned a response to Michael Masters' assertions on Wall Street and in Washington, D.C. about how long-only index funds work in the marketplace. The gist is this. Masters says they're so big markets go up. Irwin says, I'll put words in his mouth, he's full of it. We'll open the lines to your questions later on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December corn was down, or rather, December wheat was down 33 cents at $6.92¾. March futures at $7.12¾, down 33¼. And the May contract at $7.25½, down 33¼. December corn futures now $5.27¼, down 26¾. The March at $5.43¼, 26¾ lower. And the May futures at $5.52½, down 27 cents. July corn futures $5.61¼, down 27¼. November soybeans at $11.16, down 23. January 11.29¾, 23½ lower. And the March futures $11.42¼, down 23¼. May soybean futures $11.50¼, down 22¾ cents. October bean meal futures at $3.1240, down $10.30. October bean oil at $44.44, down 20, rather up 47 on the day. October live cattle futures down $2.10 at $100.50. December at $101.72½, down $2.32½. SEP feeders at $107.30, 70 lower, and the October contract at $104.17½. $2.12½ lower. October lean hog futures settled at $67.82½, 100 weight, down 45 cents. December futures were off $1.40, down 140 at $65.05. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. October crude oil futures today are currently trading at $96.40, down 76 cents. November at $97.60, 64 cents higher on the afternoon. October ethanol at $2.13¾, that's up or rather down 4 cents. November, 3¾ cents lower at $2.12¼. Natural gas trading at $7.58¹, down 32½ cents. And the RBOB gasoline at $2.46¾, off or rather up 3 tenths for the day. October heating oil at $2.78. That's diesel fuel down 4¼ cents. October propane is plant trading. It's trading now at $1.37, down 10½ cents on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average currently stands at 10,684. That's just about 74 points higher. Remember, that's a 15-minute delay. And the U.S. dollar at 77.99 is down 0.16 for the day. The CRB index trading at 350.64 is down 1.58 on the afternoon. And the Goldman Sachs at 617.50 is down 1.64. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own Daniel Pounder. He says tonight, mostly clear skies. Lows will range between 50 and 55, except near 60 in Chicago and along Lake Michigan. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Highs will range between 78 in the north to 84. In the south. Great harvest weather in store for the region over the next week. No precip expected the rest of this work week and weekend, and no significant rainfall is shown on any models until the last couple of days of September. This prolonged period of dry weather, says Mr. Pounder, should allow those floodwaters to recede and ponds in the fields to evaporate fairly quickly. After a cool night tonight, lows mostly between 45 and 50. Low temperatures for next week will mostly be in the 50s.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. As always, we're joined by Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, tell me about the marketplace. A lot of red today.
Yeah, and, you know, it basically is still continuing, you know, the financial jitters or turmoil, whatever you want to call it, I guess, coming out of New York. You know, we're going to see continued, I think, liquidation pressures in the commodity complex as index funds and a lot of those holdings liquidate to generate cash to offset losses in other areas. So I think, you know, that is going to continue to be the norm. Every once in a while, maybe corn and soybeans may pay attention to fundamentals. But the problem with the fundamentals, or if you look at current supply-demand tables, that's someone's guess as of 2 weeks ago or what. And things have changed in 2 weeks, depending upon whether or not you're looking at the U.S. economy or the world economy. So you do have demand changing by the minute, and the markets, I think, are beginning to reflect some of that.
Things in the world economy and the financial world have been changing rapidly. What do you suppose, in your mind, is the most dangerous thing that that has happened, or the thing that tells you that there is most danger around? Is it the AIG collapsing, Lehman Brothers collapsing? Is it the Fed and the European Union talking about expanding the amount of money available for swap overnight with the banks? What kinds of things really?
I heard a commentary call it the Greenspan dollars, and I think that is the crutch of the whole problem that we're seeing here. Basically, the decline in interest rates that we saw after the dot-com bubble in 2000, and then, of course, we had 9/11, and it was the rapid decline of interest rates, expansion of money supply worldwide, and then it was the encouragement of that cheap interest rate, basically had everybody, whether it's insurance companies or commodity funds or investment bankers in the mortgage industry, basically leveraging themselves two or three times with the process of derivatives. And now what we're seeing now is basically we overspent ourselves, there was all air, and now we're tumbling back in contraction in here. And basically what the Fed and central bankers are trying to do worldwide is to expand the money supply enough to bring liquidity into the marketplace, and that may or may not work. We'll have to see. But we're going to have, I think there's more shoes to drop out of the ceiling or more balloons to be popped. It's going to be a while, I think, before this market kind of settles down. I think the biggest fear that we have in ag commodities is the liquidation of index funds. The index funds still own a very large open interest in corn and soybean and wheat values, and if this contraction in the economy continues to force them to liquidate their positions, there's not enough buyers underneath this market to hold this price up. So I think that's probably the biggest fear that we see coming down the road here is continued liquidation. And you know, it took 6 months for a lot of these index funds to build up their positions from January all the way into end of July or into June, and then now we've been liquidating. You know, you're hearing more and more companies go broke because they bought expensive inventory at the high. We heard an ethanol plant just a big firm. Their cost, based upon their hedge losses now, is something like $6.50. Now, how do you think they're going to make money in this type of environment? So we've got a situation here in the ag community. You don't know who to buy to. You don't know who to sell from. to sell to or buy from. So you've got a liquidity problems, and I think any time a market collapses like what we've seen here in corn, soybeans prices, oil prices, there's more shoes to come. I mean, I just think you'll see all kinds of grain companies. You might see some elevators. You may see a whole lot of other things yet to unfold here as we go down the road, as they may or may not took their hedges off at the top and never got their hedges put on. They bought expensive inventory and never got out of them. So I think there's a lot of horror stories yet to kind of unfold here in the ag sector.
Man, you want me to ask Jason to shut the transmitter down this afternoon? That's depressing.
You know, it was a pretty good party. Everybody, I think, drank two or three bottles of whiskey on the way up, and now we're in that hangover state.
Well, let me ask you this. If the liquidation in the long side of the index funds comes, wouldn't it be, I mean, while it would have disaster effects on some companies, some businesses, would it not be temporary, even if it were to come, because especially if it was a forced liquidation that came along with the financial crisis?
Well, most of our grandfathers are 6 feet under, but that's who we need to be visiting with, our grandfather's recession of the 30s, and I think they would quickly tell you that things don't have to come back if they were alive today. So the market has a way of changing the outlook very quickly, and I think that's the concern. And I think you can see that that's the hysteria that's going on in New York, and why the Treasury Secretary and the World Bankers got together last night and pumped I don't know how many billions of dollars into the world economy to try to stop this bleeding. But you've got a lot of panic going on. I mean, the thing that's going to, if they would have probably let this insurance giant go under, you probably would have saw about 30% of people's 401ks, retirement programs, annuity programs all go up in smoke. And I think that would be very similar to our grandfather's depression of the 30s. So I think that's the problem we got here is that nobody has any confidence in anything right now, and they're trying to liquidate. They're getting their money. They want to get out of the stock market. You know, these money market funds now are breaking the buck. There's no guarantee on money market funds, so everybody's trying to scramble to get their cash as quickly as they can. That just kind of feeds on itself, Todd.
Hey, Dan, can you stay with me all the way to the bottom of the hour?
Sure.
Okay, good. Because otherwise, I'd like to go longer with you, but we're going to have to get out because I've got other things to run. And we're just going to skip all of that, I think, if you can stay with me. I've got a question for you. I was thinking about this earlier in the week and what 550 corn meant with a billion bushel carryover and trying to figure out and what that really meant and came back to the one comment that everybody tends to say, which is the market's always right. And then if you believe that, the question is, why is the market right at 550 with a billion bushel carryout? And the only sensible thing I could come up with was that corn's not worth as much as we think it's worth, and maybe it's worth $2.40 or $3.40. I think that's a number that the University of Illinois put out as a trading range middle earlier in the year, and that if we had a billion bushel carryout, that $5 would consequently push a 240 or a 340 normal corn crop up to that price. So I'm wondering what your thoughts on it, what you've thought about the marketplace at this point, and how you play it out over the coming nine months or year.
The market is only, we say the market is always right, but it's only right based upon the data it has at that particular point in time. And you know, the time, you know, things change. 24 hours from now, things are going to change. So then the market's going to have to adjust again to those factors. So the market is always adjusting to what it thinks it knows. And I would say that the market knows everything. But maybe we don't necessarily know that. But the market continuously adjusts to those outside forces. Yeah, I mean, we might be in one of these eras. I hate to use the word era, but I mean, we might be in one of these situations where we go from one extreme to the other, and now we're we went to the extreme to the upside here on the highs that we made here during June and July. Now we're in the liquidation phase. Now we're trying to find what maybe the bottom end of the extreme is. And then the market then may work its way back to some form of equilibrium point. And I think that's, the way I would view what's happening maybe in ag commodities is because I don't think anybody, if anybody tells you what they think what the price of corn is worth, I think they're kidding themselves because we are playing with different numbers that we have not been accustomed to. I mean, prior to this big run-up, we could look at the past 20 years and say, okay, 85% of the time corn traveled between $2 and $4. So when corn was at $3.50 to $4, that was a sale. And when corn was $2.50 to $2, it was a buy. Now we don't know. End users don't know. Sellers don't know. And I guess that's the process that we're in. And unfortunately, the way the market works, we seem to overdo it on the upside, and then we'll probably end up overdoing it on the bottom side. And I guess I would say that farmers still have to look at their particular situation and determine what their risk is. Farmers that own their ground, they own their machinery, don't have a lot of cost, they can kind of look at, this will make me a good living. You got other farmers that are stretched way out with high cash rent. Well, then, they got a different price level, so they have to determine what their risk is. But my guess is that this thing is going to settle down. And we may get a good recovery rally in the stock market somewhere in here that may follow through in the commodity markets. And I think at that point in time, everybody needs to kind of assess their position and where they want to be at and as we go forward from here, because I do think that there's a lot of turbulence ahead.
Two things. One, maybe you could talk about your really long-term cycles, the 10s, the 20 years, those kinds of things, and where you think we are at this point.
Well, I think from a long-term cyclical point of view, if they're applicable in today's environment, and that's the key word here,
right,
is that we are probably looking at a defensive year in 2009. 2009 is going to be a contraction year. It might even continue on to 2000 or 2010. And I think we'll look back at the highs that we had here as those maybe five-year type cycle highs, and now we're kind of in a two-year type contraction mode of some kind. and how that plays out, anybody's guesses. But my guess is that this thing has a shot at going a whole lot lower than anybody really wants to hear about. And a year ago today, we were still thinking a sale at $4 would be a good sale. So it hasn't been too long ago where we thought $4 was a good sale on corn, and where we thought beans $9 was a good sale. So, it wouldn't be bit surprising to me that we go back to those points that we thought were a good sale, but now, given the rise in input costs and whatnot, that those are not necessarily good sales anymore.
It was a little less than less than a year ago today. I think it was the 12th of September. I called my brother Rob, and I don't usually give anybody advice on this. And I said, Rob, this crop is big. Sell it all out of the field if you can. He knows better than to follow anything I have to say anyway. But he doesn't let me forget that. And then I think it was maybe a month and a half later where I said to you, I said, I give. This thing's going up. I don't understand why, but it's going higher. And now I guess I'm on the opposite side of the fence, and the financial thing, the financial crisis appears to be the reason why on the downside, I guess. But
well, I think the thing about the financial crisis is time I think they get done with everything in New York, there won't be any money to come back into the commodity markets like what we experienced last year. And I make a comment for all those that were complaining about index funds and investment money being in the marketplace. They got their wish, and sometimes you gotta be careful what you wish for, because they got it. And now, probably before too long, everybody's going to be wanting these index funds to come back into the marketplace, and they ain't going to be around. But you can just glance here. I mean, if you want some wild numbers for everybody to think about,
sure.
There's reason to believe that November 2009 soybean futures, now I'm talking about a year down the road, is going to go back into the $8 range. That's the last thing anybody wants to hear, I'm sure. And if you want to take a look at corn, you could probably begin to talk about maybe Dees 09 corn at some point in time going back into the $4 range, just above $4. That, you know, that might even happen here with the 08 the way we're going. But I do think that, you know, $4 corn and $8 soybeans, it would not be too wild of imagination for prices to go back there. Now, whether or not they would stay there, that's another question, because if we go back to those levels, the fertilizer costs and all this kind of stuff's going to have to come down. The chemical costs, seed costs, and all that, everybody that was raising their prices to take advantage of these higher acre grosses that farmers were coming up with, the farmer ain't going to have that money to spend for that, so that's going to have to make some downward price adjustments.
Yeah, the thing about the fertilizer costs is interesting. I saw some GrowMark numbers at a meeting in Gilman that Dave Dickey had put together not more than a month ago, and they were showing some slides about fertilizer use around the globe and how much of it was used in other places, and we're not the only competitor for that one, and I just can't imagine the price of fertilizer really dropping dramatically, and that could have some dire impact on how much grain is actually raised in the U.S. It could be that the price of corn just isn't high enough to pay for the nitrogen.
Well, my guess is that there's people along this fertilizer market real bad, and unless the demand comes forward, I think they might be forced to liquidate, or their banker might force them to liquidate. I don't. I have a sneaky feeling this fertilizer thing may not be as stout as everybody thinks. And it wouldn't be a bit surprising to me to see some point in time there's a big sell-off in nitrogen values, because, you can talk about world demand all you want to, but if commodity prices deflate, world buyers ain't going to be able to pay that high price for fertilizer either. So it's going to have to adjust to commodity values. Now, you know, maybe this here is just a big bear trap, and we're going to turn around and have massive inflation, and inflation will bail out the high expensive fertilizer. Maybe corn will go back to $6-$7, but at least right now, until we have a little better understanding of what actually is all the implications of what's going on in New York and around the world, it's real tricky to forecast in here, Todd.
Dan, thanks for staying with us for the extra time today.
Very well.
All right, Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group, joining us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Lavitt. And then after that, we'll talk more about the index fund. Scott Irwin, ag economist, will join us for the second half of the Closing Market Report. It's the Harvest Hour edition.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois Senate President Emil Jones is calling state senators back to work so they can vote on ethics legislation. Originally, Jones wasn't going to act on the ethics bill until the Senate's next scheduled session in November, but the delay raised constitutional questions that might have killed the bill or tied it up in legal battles. Presidential candidate Barack Obama had called Jones this week and urged him to act quickly. Jones said today he's agreed because of his friendship with Obama. No date has been set for the Senate's meeting. The ethics legislation would restrict campaign donations by people doing business with the state. The Champaign County State's Attorney's Office says it will not charge the son-in-law of a murder victim for hitting the man who pleaded guilty to the crime. Corey Shackelford struck Kenneth Sean Kelly during Kelly's sentencing hearing yesterday. A newspaper reported Kelly was not seriously injured. Kelly was sentenced to 50 years in prison at the hearing after the attack. The Illinois Supreme Court says a man convicted of a murder-for-hire scheme didn't get a fair trial because he didn't know his lawyer had previously represented the victim in the case. Today's ruling means Juan Hernandez's 2004 conviction has been thrown out, but he could be retried for trying to hire someone to kill Jaime Cepeda. Employees in the Illinois Attorney General's office are seeking out complaints of gasoline price gouging, but they say so far they've not determined if any of the reports they've gotten have merit. More than 600 complaints have come into the state in the wake of Hurricane Ike, and a spokesman for the Attorney General says they're checking price records to see if they'll follow up on any reports. 7 years ago, the state went after at least one chain for allegations of price gouging after 9/11. Truancy has been declining lately in the Champaign School District, but officials say they have yet to make their attendance goals. That's why a new effort known as the Stop Truancy Outreach Program, or STOP, is now making the rounds of parents' homes. It'll begin next week. Volunteers will make in-home visits to remind parents of the importance of making sure that their kids are in school. Their goal is to raise attendance across the Unit 4 district above 95%. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. This is the Harvest Hour edition. For most of these radio stations, we'll continue our program after 2:36 Central Time, when we'll discuss some of the outside markets and what's been happening with index funds with University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Scott Irwin on the line with us now to talk about the agricultural weather forecast is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Hi, Pete.
Yeah, hi, Todd.
Tell me about the forecast here in the Midwest. Looks like a good one.
Oh, it sure does. We've got a little cool weather tonight and tomorrow, but then above normal temperatures, and we don't see any significant precipitation across almost all of the Midwestern Corn Belt states, not only this weekend, but most of next week as well, and temperatures running anywhere from 2 to 6 degrees above normal. So that's going to be a boost for some of this very late crop we've got here. The crop continues to be behind on maturity, and at least there are no threats of any frost or freeze to get an early termination of the crop coming up this week. Looking further ahead, though, we do see finally some sign that this little Indian summer period is going to go by the following week when we do see some colder weather.
And then if you look around the globe, what do you see?
Well, let's see. Same stuff that we've talked about, that the problem that most of the globe in good shape, the little wet weather in Europe is hampering harvesting there, but nothing significant. The weather's okay in Australia for their winter crops, for the finishing of their winter crops. The Argentina is where the problem has been. Actually, not only have they been dry for so long, but now they've actually had a little late frost down there, and this is also giving them problems on most of their vegetative stage of winter wheat crops down in there, which are having a little problem with cold weather. So that's probably the only shadow on global. And, of course, we have problems here with all the rain that we've had this past week in the Midwest, outstanding amounts of rain. And that impact on the crops here has not been fully realized as yet.
Hey, Pete, also, could you check in on the Chinese corn and soybean crop? They should be entering the harvest season there. Are they as late as we are?
No, they have not been as late as we are, though over there they've got warm and dry weather that's bringing the crop along, even in Manchuria, where they had been a little bit behind. They've had some wet weather in the North China Plain, which is slowing some of the harvesting. But I don't think they didn't get as far behind as we did out there. And, you know, one final thing we might say, this is third Thursday, so very quickly, the long-range forecast. We've had the forecast for the next month, the month of October, is for a little warmth in the northeast and in parts of the southwest, and no wide departures from normal anywhere else in the country. And then for the October, November, December 90-day forecast, they have warmth in the Rockies and the high plains areas, but normal weather, or at least no predictions of either above or below normal for the rest of the country.
Thanks much, Pete. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Pete Levitt is agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. In just a few seconds, we'll continue our program on most of these radio stations when we talk with Scott Irwin. This is the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll continue our conversations today, as we have all this week and will through the 10th of October. Expanding the Closing Market Report this afternoon, Scott Irwin joins us. He is an ag economist from the University of Illinois in studio this afternoon, and we will take your phone calls for him. I think there will be many, so I'm going to give out the numbers now. Hopefully you'll give us a call at 217-333-9455. Or 800-222-9455. That's 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Hi, Scott. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Well, beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. Let's jump right into this, because I want you to talk about an article that you penned for, and I don't remember what the website is, other than if you dump in Econ Browser, is that right, into Google, you'll find this particular website on your search engine. And then there's a pretty good conversation. You posted a new paper there this morning that refutes what Michael Masters has been telling the folks in Washington about the amount of money that's been coming into the marketplace from index funds and others, and whether it really moves the market around very much. Why don't you summarize it for me very quickly?
Okay. It is definitely true that we have had a tidal wave of new funds invested in the long side of commodity futures and over-the-counter derivative instruments. My basic position is that in and of itself, that doesn't mean anything. It's fundamentals and fundamental information that drives commodity prices. The price discovery process is sometimes messy and hard to appreciate in real time, but there's just simply no strong and compelling evidence that it is this new money that is, in fact, driving price levels in and of itself.
And now you argue against Michael Masters, who's been speaking to in Washington to Senate committees and to the Homeland Security Committee and others, suggesting that the money is large enough that even in the crude oil market that it is able to move those markets to the upside. But let's narrow it to Chicago and talk about the commodity markets, because oftentimes on our programs we talk about the index funds. They're long only index funds. The numbers are big. They're, comparatively speaking, they're really big. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they drive the market higher?
Again, it seems really to go counter to common sense to argue that they don't impact prices in the long run. You know, how could that big amount of money not be moving the market price? That's the objection. And the reality is because I think it reflects fundamental misunderstandings about how our commodity futures markets work. They're two-sided markets. Some people like to call this wave of long-only index fund money as new demand. My argument is that makes about as much sense as calling whoever is on the short side of those contracts new supply. Even though the exchanges don't like to have it put this way, I think it's the best way to understand futures markets, is that they're financial markets where people are, for a variety of reasons, placing side bets on commodity prices. And there's always got to be a long and a short to every transaction. So for every long index fund investor who's buying commodities, there's someone else at the given prices who's selling.
Well, who is that someone else generally? Is it the commercial?
You know, we can't say that definitively because we don't have that transaction record. But in terms of the flow of data that we can get publicly from the CFTC, yeah, it's the large commercials have increased their positions basically at the same time as the – they've increased their net short position at the same time as the long index funds have gone long.
Are they speculating in that case then? As opposed to a commercial?
We don't know. That's another part of what I argue is that the common view of how futures markets work is really wrong. The view is that you typically hear is that commercials are hedgers. They're these benign risk avoiders who are really beneficial to markets. And the speculators, there's always this wariness that they're, you know, on the verge of being harmful because they're such risk seekers. When, in fact, we know for a fact that firms we label as commercials or hedgers sometimes speculate on the price level. Sometimes they speculate on the basis. They always speculate on the basis. And speculators sometimes are doing spread trades, all sorts of different things that are not obvious in their impact on the price level. So this is a very dynamic, complex game between people we or firms that we label hedgers and speculators, and it's just not as simple as people make it out to be.
Let me see if I can boil this down in simple parlance. Is it that when the long index funds were to buy, they would come in at a market price, and no matter how much they buy, they're buying at that market price. So by design, it's not driving the market up because they came in at, say, let's make it easy and say 550. That's where they came in, and no matter how many contracts they bought, it really wouldn't change the price?
That is basically the economist's argument, and that is so far consistent with all the evidence that we have. I believe when we get through with all of the postmortem, we will show that they probably do pay higher execution costs, the bid-ask bounce. As we call it, for getting in and out of the market because their positions are so large. But that's not the same. It doesn't move the price level.
Is there historical evidence that suggests that you're right? I mean, can you go back in time any place and take a look at another time and say there was this huge influx of money and it didn't really change the price or what should have been the market price? It just bought more of those contracts.
I think that there's example after example after example of this. On the long side, the most recent comparable period would be 1973 through 1975. It's remarkable, Todd. If you go back and read the articles in the business press, popular press, farm press, you could just change the dates and a little bit about who the players are, and you have exactly the same arguments being proposed then. And then we also had proposals for very restrictive legislation in 1973, 74, and 75 against speculators at that time. The other thing that's interesting is we've seen in agriculture, the tendency is to argue that those kinds of waves of speculation drive prices down. And particularly when we see really low prices, there will often be accusations that it's speculators driving prices down well below their fundamental value. So, you know, you can find accusations against speculator almost any time you want and on either side of the market, which in and of itself, I think, kind of helps prove the point that they're not likely what's moving the market.
Now, are there things that are outside of this, no, the index funds are not driving the marketplace higher that are different, or the speculators in general are not driving it higher? For instance, would the soft red winter wheat market earlier in the year be something that would show that, well, convergence didn't work? And so if the cash price wasn't right, then the speculators actually did drive the marketplace higher.
I think that's an interesting example that we're still working through. We're hard at work on research on that very question. And I think the wheat market right now actually is probably one of the markets out of all the commodity markets in the world that does deserve close research attention in terms of what's causing the divergences between the cash and the futures. It's occurred at some points in time for corn and soybeans as well, but not nearly to the degree that there is in wheat. So I will admit in that particular instance, I'm not 100% sure what's going on.
Listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, you can this afternoon. The phone number is 217-333-9455. That's WILL, 217-333-9455, or 800-222-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Give us a call, and you can talk to Scott Irwin this afternoon. Tell me what you think the fundamentals are like in the marketplace for commodities at this point.
Well, I'm going to stick to what I think I know a little bit about.
Okay, that's fine.
The corn and soybean markets in particular, we have definitely, obviously, seen a large drop in both corn and soybean prices since their peaks in June. And the real question, there are two real questions right now that I see in the marketplace for corn and soybeans in terms of fundamentals. One, what kind of crop size are we really looking at for corn and soybeans? And after the September USDA crop report, there's an unusually large amount of uncertainty about what is the real crop size due to probably things that your listeners are well aware of in terms of replanted acres and how those are counted. How productive are they likely to be? What's the impact of all of this unusual weather that we've had really from the beginning of the season? So I think that there's a lot of uncertainty about yields, and that's one of the key.
And then when you talk with Daryl Good, as discussions go about these index funds and what producers ought to be doing at this time of year, if the index funds don't have that big of an impact, even if they're rolling out, then they're not going to have an impact under what you're thinking. What do producers do to protect themselves, if anything at all? Do they need to protect themselves from the idea or the rumor that speculators are getting out?
No, not largely. One clarification, Todd. I think that we might find that during that very concentrated roll period, when the index funds are going from one contract to the next, that there might be some small and rather fleeting effects in that they might be driving the price of the nearby contracts down and the following contracts up a little bit. But, I mean, I think we're talking about very small price moves that I think are reversed fairly quickly within a few days at most.
Now, can I ask you what is it that prompted you to write the article refuting what Michael Masters had to say?
Well, I've actually been at work on this topic for the last couple of years with a former graduate student in our department and also with a colleague down at SIU, Southern Illinois University. So we've been working on this, and if we just had good timing that we were beginning to think about this well in advance of the problems really erupting in the public sphere. And then this summer, I testified before Congress once and kind of became involved in the public debate. I also co-authored an op-ed piece in the New York Times, so I've been very much involved in the public debate. I thought that someone needed to step forward and present a forceful defense of, I think, what is by far and away at least the academic consensus about the efficiency of the price discovery process as it exists. There's a lot of wild accusations out there that need to be addressed.
And, of course, this deals more with crude oil, but it's about commodity markets in general.
Correct.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about your paper and crude oil and what Michael Masters has had to say. And if listeners would like to join us, they can give us a call at 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You're listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report, a full hour of agriculture in the afternoon right here on this radio station. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll be back in just about 2 minutes on some of these radio stations for the Harvest Hour.